Welcome to the Lemper Report Live. On today's broadcast, the effect of California's rains will affect food prices throughout the nation. A new ban in Italy, fast food drive-thrus get smarter and better, the fight over food labels, the FTC goes after weight loss, and on the bullseye, another breakfast cereal misses the mark. Let's get started. So, Sally, here in California, it's been raining forever. Since December, and new reports are telling us that our crops are getting decimated. There's been at least 12 atmospheric rivers here in California, and we've got to say that with the exception of strawberries, all the crops are really getting damaged. What we're seeing is a lot of cropland underwater. Closer to 100,000 acres. There's leafy greens that are being destroyed up in Salinas Valley, big agriculture area. Lots, 10,000 of acres have been flooded there. And also the floods have delayed the planting of the crops themselves. So we are probably going to have more shortages taking place than ever before. So, food prices as high as they are, they're going to get worse.
Yes, there are some unprecedented weather conditions happening in California right now, and it is wreaking havoc for farmers and agriculture there. California is our leading provider in the United States for fruits and vegetables. And as you mentioned, those leafy greens, those are not salvageable because of food safety issues. The farmers cannot get in to plant, so they are delaying, they're predicting a month on they're delaying planting. So that will mean that harvesting will come later and there will be scarcity when it comes to these products, driving those prices up.
And there's also certain crops that are only grown in California, like almonds. So we're going to have some serious problems. And because of the water, the farmers can't even get into the fields. They can't run their tractors through there and so on. It's really going to be an absolute mess. Let's head over to Europe. And Italy has come up with a new bill to ban laboratory-produced meats and other synthetic foods. The reason that they want to do it is the importance of Italy's food traditions. And farmers are, elated that the government is doing this.
Yes, there's a big push to protect the traditional food and the farmers and the agriculture industry in Italy. It's very interesting because animal welfare and environmental activists are not completely on board with this. But what we're hearing is that, they would like to completely ban the production of synthetic lab meats, and that would also include any synthetic milks as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the whole thing to me looks like a PR stunt, if you would, that Italy is going to separate itself from the EU in banning this. However, if the EU does agree to it, not the ban, but allowing these foods in, they can override Italy. So I think we're going to have a couple years of, major fighting going on between Italy and the EU, but nothing new there. They have always been fighting. What's interesting to me is that Wingstop has become the latest fast food restaurant that's starting to use AI bots to take customers' orders. McDonald's already has, Taco Bell, Chipotle, Popeyes, and Domino's. Basically, they're using it for drive-through services, for taking orders over the phone. And there's two reasons. Number one is certainly these bots are making less mistakes than human beings do. But a lot of people, even with those signs out front that they're offering $12 an hour, just don't want to work in the fast food environment.
Right. And not only do they make less mistakes, but also bots don't need breaks and don't need time off. So that is something that is a benefit to fast food business owners. What I do wonder is, will there be a segment of consumers that get frustrated with having to deal with bots with everything that they do? AI seems to be popping up in a lot of areas of our lives. And I wonder if there will be a segment of consumers that are looking for the human connection. So that will be interesting to see if there are some businesses that position and market themselves that way.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. The other thing that I'm a bit concerned about is, I mean, my first job was at a McDonald's. A lot of people's first jobs are in fast food. There's not a lot of places where you can work when you're 15 or 16 or 17 years old, and just make, a little bit of money as you go through college or whatever else. If those jobs disappear, what happens to this whole population? And I forget that there was a McDonald's commercial a few years ago that talked about the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who had their first job at McDonald's. And if we take that away, how are these people going to make money? Not everybody can mow lawns. So we've got to look at that. A lot on labeling this week. What we're seeing is a new study out of the UK that was just published in Frontiers in Nutrition. 405 participants were tested on adding healthy labels to online purchases. And then they had three buckets. One was, to be actively recording your choices. Second is pre-commitment. Third is social comparison. And what they found is those people who were in that first group actively record their choices about healthier foods. Well, guess what? Their consumption of healthier foods went up. And the other group that offered a discount, theirs didn't go up nearly as much. So when if you relate to information versus discount, looks like the information wins. And the third category, where it was about what your peers were buying, really had very little influence at all.
Yes, this is a very interesting study, and a little bit it's a little bit not surprising that self-monitoring was what encouraged people the most to buy those healthy products. We have seen research for years now about food journaling and recording what you eat and following that and how effective that is in eating healthier. There are apps out there now that we use to help track our fitness, to track what we eat. People use them to quit smoking or to cut down on their alcohol. So this is something that our culture has sort of has been turned onto as a method to track their streak, as you would say, their healthy streak, and to feel motivated by that.
Yeah. And, as we're talking about labels, there's also a European Commission that is proposing limits on environmental labeling. There's a lot of schemes out there now, whether it's for air miles, whether it's, social injustice. There's over 230 different environmental labels. And what they're finding is that they're not very accurate, and they're not helpful. And almost a third of people are saying, we don't believe what these labels say. So in this case, I think that the good news is that the government is, or at least in Europe, is going to set in and really regulate what these sustainable labels can be. We don't have that here. We have a lot of interest from retailers wanting to get more into sustainability, both on labeling as well as, demanding from the products that they buy what those sustainability practices are. But it all comes down to the fact that maybe we can't believe the information.
Yes, the amount of these labels has really taken a lot of meaning out of the ones that actually do have meaning to us. So it is important for there to be some sort of understanding that consumers can have of, not only what they mean, but also who is certifying this label. Is it a third party? Is this a self-certification? Where is that coming from? I believe consumers need to know that.
Absolutely. And I think that you bring up a really good point that there's a lot of phony labels out there that companies are self-certifying themselves that might not be true. Again, from the EU, they're looking at pesticide use, carbon sinks, non-circulatory of fossil energy use in food production, off-season production, biodiversity, positive impacts on nature and ecosystems, GMOs, and animal welfare. So maybe we go from 232 of these labels down to a meaningful half a dozen, and then people start believing them. So the FTC has decided to get into the business of social media, and I think this is great news. What they're finding is, a tremendous amount of false claims as it relates to disease prevention, especially they saw that during COVID, weight loss products, multi-level marketing. So the FTC has ordered Meta, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat, Twitter, Pinterest, and Twitch to, give them information, every kind of information possible, including their ad revenue, the number of ad views, other performance metrics, including categories of products and services that are more prone to deception, such as those intended to treat, prevent, or cure substance use disorders and tout income opportunities. The reason for this is last year, consumers reported losing over $1.2 billion in fraud that started on social media. That's the number one place that this is happening. So when we take a look at all these social media initiatives, all these hearings that are taking place in Congress with these social media companies, maybe we're finally going to see, something come of it.
Yes, it is good that some action is being taken. Those eight social media companies that they are looking at are Meta, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat, Twitter, Pinterest, and Twitch. And they are that some of these companies are preying on vulnerable people with ads that claim to have disease prevention and weight loss. We see this in the multi-level marketing world a lot because they have so many different representatives out there for these multi-level marketing products. I believe we talked about one on the show last year that claimed to cure cancer. And so we have to be very discerning about what is being advertised to people because there are a lot of people that are being scammed.
And I think that if they start with weight loss, multi-level marketing, disease prevention, it's a good solid start that I think everybody can agree to. And then it's quite possible that it'll expand and have some kind of checks and balances on everything that gets posted, which would be, great news for us all. Thanks, Sally. On Lost in the Supermarket, I spoke with Brad Sive, who created a new digital community that will change the way consumers learn about recipes and how to cook them correctly. For the full episode, just log on to supermarketguru.com, click on the Lost in the Supermarket tile. Here's what Brad had to say. So when we look at public market, in particular, what do you hope the takeaways are going to be for those people who log on?
I think the first thing that we want to build is a place where, people are interested in food econ and enjoy culture, enjoy human stories, spend time and build a relationship with us. That's what we want the takeaway from. And we also want it to be something different than they're currently seeing right now in the digital landscape. And so it's really about deep, high quality storytelling, but then also inviting them to tell their stories. So I think there's multiple different things that we're doing with public market. One is telling the stories of, you know, of chefs out there whose stories can't be told or aren't being told because they're really interested in running a business, or, you know, just telling the food stories of our community, because I know there's a lot of people out there that have interesting stories and we'd like to tell those as well.
On today's Bullseye, another breakfast cereal brand misses the mark. For the fourth time in 2020, Kellogg's launched Little Debbie Oatmeal Cream Pie Cereal. In 2021, Little Debbie Cosmic Brownie Cereal. Last year, it was Little Debbie Nutty Buddy Cereal. And to commemorate the 60th anniversary of Little Debbie's Swiss Rolls, you got it, Kellogg's Little Debbie Swiss Rolls Cereal. Now, I'm not sure if they're going after the baby boomer nostalgia or kids, maybe both. But as the World Obesity Federation prediction says, by 2035, 51% of the world's population will be overweight or obese unless we change the foods that we eat. Here in the U.S. in 2023, the World Health Organization says that 19.7% of adolescents and children are already obese. Two-thirds of adults are overweight or obese, according to the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. So I have to question, do we really need another sweetened and sweet-tasting cereal? We know that consuming a diet that's high in added sugars, whether in beverages, candy, baked goods, or breakfast cereals, is a contributing factor in weight gain and chronic health conditions, including obesity, heart disease, and diabetes, according to the National Institutes of Health. What we also know is that sugar has a pleasant taste that triggers brain reward circuitries and then stimulates the consumption of foods that are rich in sugars. From the 2020 research, the gut-brain axis mediates sugar preference. My take, the more sugars we eat, the more sugars we want to eat. And we do. I couldn't find the new Little Debbie Swiss Rolls cereal for a look at the nutritionals and ingredients, but the front of the pack shows 160 calories and 16 grams of total sugars. Now, that's before the milk for a 1 1/4 cup serving. I did find Little Debbie Nutty Buddy cereal. So to get a sense of the cereal, the good news is that the whole wheat flour is the first ingredient. The not so good news is that the second is sugar. Add 3/4 cup of skim milk and 1 1/3 cup of cereal, which is a little less than 1.5 ounces, will set you back 26 grams of added and naturally occurring sugars. It does contain some vitamins and minerals, as do most breakfast cereals, along with natural and artificial colors and flavors. And how realistic, by the way, is a 1.5 ounce portion of breakfast cereal anyway? The UK publication Which conducted an experiment with more than 120 people to see just how much cereal they poured into a bowl. In the case of Bran Flakes, Cheerios, Corn Flakes, and Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes, the recommended serving was 30 grams, about 1.1 ounces, less than we have here. Here's what the average size was that these consumers poured. For Bran Flakes, 70 grams, over double. Cheerios, 49 grams. Corn Flakes, 58 grams. And Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes, 53 grams. Now, to be fair, here in the U.S., the average serving size is greater, typically 42 grams or 1.48 ounces. As most Americans purchase at least one box of cereal per shopping trip, that amounts to 2.7 billion boxes of cereal. That means that the average American consumes 14 pounds of cereal every year. I urge breakfast cereal companies and their brand managers to reconsider the facts. There are cereals out there that taste great and that are not loaded in sugars or taste sweet and are better for us. If, in fact, we really want to change the way people eat, let's stop being so opportunistic and open up that dusty nutrition book. Sally, any comments this week? I feel it that John Pandola has one for us.
John does have something for us today, and it's regarding our California flooding story. He says, as honeybees don't like cold, wet, windy, or cloudy weather, any crop in Central California that is pollinizer dependent will be off. That means stone fruits and cherries for summer, almonds and pistachios in the fall, and some earlier citrus 7 to 10 months from now.
John makes a great point that we didn't even talk about, the honeybees. And we know we have a honeybee disaster on our hands anyway. So this weather isn't contributing in a positive way to us. John, again, thanks for joining us. The Lemper Report is all about inspiring ideas, making our industry think, and challenging each other. Let's think about being the shopper and how we can bring our supermarkets and our restaurants closer to meet their needs. I hope you'll come back to join us and John on next week's installment of the Lemper Report Live, when we'll focus on the biggest and the best insights and the things that really matter. Be sure to visit supermarketguru.com for the latest marketing analysis, issues, and trends. And don't forget to join us right back here next Monday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern for more.